Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. On the show today, I'm joined by Dennis Morphy. Dennis, what's the crack?
Thanks, man. It's a pleasure to be on today. Thanks for inviting me on.
Guys, I've asked Dennis to come on the show today because Dennis is the author and creator of the Happy Mindset podcast. He's also wrote a fantastic book, Taking My Life Back. Mm. Brilliant book.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
How is the popularity and fame of being an author going for you?
It's not going to my head yet, and I thankfully, but I know it's good to get the book out there. It was something I worked on for the last year, and it's been a bit of a process, and like I'm hoping that it gets out to the right people now as well, and they'll be able to take something from it, from the journey I went on.
Yeah, I love the simplicity of it, and I loved some of the quotes in it, but we'll dig into that later, because I'd love to talk about some of the stuff. It was like when you and I spoke on the phone or on Skype. What was the other thing you had? Not Skype, what was the other
Zoom,
one? Zoom. Zoom. Yeah. Never heard of Zoom, so there you go. Bit of learning for you, Zoom instead of Skype. Me and you had similar thoughts around things. We've experienced similar stuff. And so when I read the book, I was like, ah, yeah, that's really familiar. And it was very simplistic. But we'll come back to that and we'll touch on it. First and foremost, before we start, what's one of the best gifts you've ever been given?
So what comes to mind at the moment is it was just the Apple AirPods. My sister gave them to me. And I listen to a lot of audiobooks and just a lot of music and stuff. So for me, like the actually having proper quality sound in my ears is quite good. So that's what's come to mind there now.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So any hints for Christmas? There you go. Something like that. Something sounder.
Yeah.
Something techie, deadly. The Happy Mindset podcast. Give us a feel about what is it all about. Give us your synopsis of it.
So yeah, like it's gradually been evolving. Like at the start, it started off because I had some people helping me. Like I had a guy who was helping me understand state of mind, another guy helping me about computer programming, and I was like, I'm learning a lot of stuff here that's helping my life. I was like reading a lot of books and listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff, and I was like, what's the easiest way to get this out to people? So I was like, podcasts. And as well, for me, it was like a personal thing where I'm putting myself out there more and like getting over my own insecurities by doing the podcast. So the Happy Mindset itself comes from, I guess I touch on it in the book. It's like, for me, what changed my life was when I started asking myself, like, what actually would make me happy in my life. I was constantly kind of living for other people and living for how I thought I should be living. And when I went more towards, like, what is happiness for me, those types of thoughts, then I started moving in a different direction in my life and started doing the things that I always felt kind of weird for liking or weird for wanting to do and stuff like that. So the podcast is really about helping people to find their own voice and find like what really matters to them and not be insecure about it. Start overcoming those insecurities and start doing the things that just light you up for the sake of it. That's basically
fantastic. Can I just go back when you said, you know, liking things that are weird, or can you just go a little deeper on that? What do you mean by that when you say that?
Even something as simple as writing. So I actually enjoy writing, but I've often felt weird about wanting to do that on the weekend, going to a coffee shop writing and that type of stuff. I would have been, I guess you grew up in a culture where it's like you go to the pub on the weekend and you don't really take an interest in stuff that's seen as academic. For me, like, writing is quite different to how I had the experience I had in school. So for me, writing is a way to like understand myself better, to process things better. It's a way to ask questions out of curiosity and like really kind of, I guess it's like having a curiosity about life again. I felt like in the school system was about like just, it was very kind of rigid and very kind of, you're measuring up to somebody else's standards all the time, so you think that's what writing is. So to an extent it helps, it gives you like grammar and structure and all that kind of stuff, but you do lose a lot of like curiosity and looking at life in a certain way where you're like, this is very interesting, like life is interesting. It's like there's lots of different things you can do in life. So that for me is what writing is kind of.
Yeah. it wasn't really promoted back in the day, creativity, you know, artistic, yeah. You know, you and I have spoke on the phone about that, you know, you'd be laughed at, you know, even studying for exams. Remember, who was I talking to recently, you know, I was talking to a guy in the job, and he was talking about his wife, you know, we come from a similar area, but she would have said to her friends, years ago, oh no, I didn't even study for an exam, no, I don't study. It was actually uncool even to be educated back then. And like, so for you now to talk about creativity or writing on the weekend, that'd be laughed at, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sure it'd still be laughed at. It's just, what's changed in my life is that I've been able to like become more comfortable with that, overcome my own insecurities about what that means and stuff, and start seeing that it's my own stories I had about that being weird that was really what was limiting me. It wasn't actually other people's perception. So like that for me is like, that's what the podcast is about, like helping people to understand like how much you're just getting in your own way. And like when you start seeing that, you can start doing things that like are what you're meant to be doing. So that's
absolutely. Do you feel now, like, just to touch on what you said there, you feel like you've overcome your say your insecurities. Do you feel limitless now? I have a similar experience to you. I just feel like the gates are open now.
Yeah,
everything is possible.
I feel the gates are open, but at the same time, I still have like fear there. But it's just I know I can act this in spite of fear. That's, I guess, has probably been the game changer for me. Before, like, if I felt like I'd fear on something, my story would have been that that's just something I can't do. I'm not that type of person. I didn't have that kind of growth mindset of like, okay, I'm going to feel uncomfortable for a while here because I don't know what I'm doing. But gradually, as I do it more and I face my fears, I'll become comfortable with it. And then I'll realize whether it's for me or not, because sometimes it's not even for you. But you can figure that out until you actually do it.
That's an absolutely cracking point. The fear doesn't become debilitating. Mm. But once you go through it, and then you can make that decision, like we were talking earlier about the radio, like I had fear going into that. But I went through it, and then I also realised, this actually is not for me. I'm not interested. But a long time ago, I would have been debilitated by the fear, like you're saying.
Yeah.
It's very empowering, isn't it?
Yeah, it's empowering. And it's like, I guess you lose a certain amount of fear around the emotions that are like overwhelming. Mm. You can start figuring out that like it might feel overwhelming now, but what's the smallest step I can take to start diminishing that overwhelm? So like, even for me, like I didn't straight away do a podcast. I was blogging for a long time. And even blogging, I can remember the first time I was, even something as simple as blogging for me was like, I don't know whether I want to put that out there. Anybody can read it. And after a while, I realized a lot of people don't read this stuff. Starting off, like nobody reads your blog post. But at the time, I thought that was the biggest thing, sharing my thoughts to the world in a blog post.
Yeah.
And that was a small step. And then after a while, you're like, oh, this isn't that challenging. Okay, let's move it on to the next level.
Deadly.
And kind of you go up level like that.
Fantastic. That's deadly. I love it. I love it. I love hearing that. I love hearing the way you've grown through it and through your insecurities. I take my hat off you. It's fantastic. Here's a question for you. What failures have you learned the most from while setting up your podcast? You know, the whole journey you've been on, really.
Failures. I think it's been the relationship with failure. It's that sense of like failure is the worst thing that can happen. Like, I guess I find the podcast is kind of strange sometimes because you don't know exactly whether you're doing things right or whether you're doing things in your own way. Like, I suppose the biggest failures would be like just procrastinating on something for a long time. And I suppose not being honest. I guess what the book helped me to do was to like just be honest with like my journey, what I actually learned, put it out there, let go of the outcome. I guess when I had the biggest fear of failure, it was that expectation that I was going to get a certain outcome, like certain people would accept me more, or I would have like a bigger sense of validation. Once I started realizing that like you can put stuff out there and let go of the expectation, because that's the biggest thing I've learned. And then I'm continuously kind of learning to deal with failure. Like, I've got a career at the moment as a software developer, which is very new to me. And each day I go in there and it's like, sometimes you get a problem and you're like, how the hell am I going to solve this? And so those old feelings of like, I'm going to be found out, or I'm not going to figure this out.
The imposter syndrome. Yeah.
Stuff comes up. So that's like, I found that I've never fully gotten used to that. Like, I expect it now, which is a plus. Before, I wouldn't even expect that. I thought that was just like a sign I shouldn't be doing something. But it for me, it hasn't fully gone away. And that relationship with failure, I suppose, has been so ingrained in me, like the fear of making mistakes, that it still comes up. But I'm starting to realize more with software development and stuff is that the whole process is about like building things. There's going to be bugs. There's going to be different things to fix and stuff all the time. It's endless. There's always features. There's always bugs and stuff. So I guess by doing it every day, having that experience, that's how your relationship with failure can change a bit.
And it's like, we won't get into the book yet, but there is a quote in the book where it says, I think it's the happy hypnosis, that we're a hard word for failure, and we have to reword for happiness, isn't it?
Yeah, like our default mode is survival mode. So like just having awareness of that like
survive, you know, that's the one, isn't it, where we're hard word just to survive. We're not word to be happy.
Yeah. So it's so for me, it's like it's deciding, asking yourself questions to lead you in a more direction, like what's happiness for me. But I talk about it more from a point of view of like having meaning and a sense of happiness on a personal level that like other people mightn't get, but you know yourself that like you're doing the best you can and that you're actually creating stuff that somehow bring some joy to your life, even though it mightn't make sense to somebody else. That's I guess understanding that your brain is wired to like keep you safe, and to, it's going to pay more attention to the fear and the threats than it is to like the things that you want to create and the stuff that you want to focus on. Just having that awareness, you can realize that I can start overriding my brain a bit more and not have to like live in default survival mode all the time.
Yeah, like that, like when I found out, when I had that aha moment that I'm not my thoughts and I'm not my fear, and then I become the watcher of my fear and my thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, this is mad. I thought I was engulfed in it, you know? And then when I realized that I'm not them, and you can actually watch yourself be nervous in a situation like me sitting here with you, I was like, oh, look at you, you're nervous right now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're not, I am nervous, and you're not enmeshed in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like you're not a nervous person, you just get nervous every now and again.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It would have been like, oh, I'm a shy person, and you'd limit yourself in that way without knowing it. But then when you start realizing, like, you can be shy at certain stages, you can be nervous at certain stages. Another key thing for me was that I started realizing that, like, you can be shy around certain people, you can be, like, not talkative a lot, but it might just sometimes be that the environment you're in and the people you're around and stuff, you mightn't have shared interests, shared values and stuff, and it's not a reflection on you as a person. I didn't know that when I was growing up. I always thought that, like, if a lot of people say you're shy, then you're shy, and then you start acting that out in most of your kind of interactions and stuff. But I didn't. It was only through learning French and taking a curiosity and speaking to lots of different people that I started to notice that I would talk more when I was interested in the person or they were interested in me, that the conversation just flowed. Like, that's
yeah, that's fascinating, because then you start wearing the identity that people put on you,
yeah.
Whether you're shy, whether you're this, whether you're that, when it's actually situational.
Mm.
You could be a different person in different situations or
yeah.
Different people depending on their energy.
Yeah,
it's fucking crazy, yeah. Isn't it? What has been your greatest learning so far from the podcast, or learnings that, you know, through your journey even?
I think the biggest thing from the podcast has been like the listening. So like from doing a lot of episodes and interviewing a lot of different people, you become a better listener, and you, and like I've noticed that I've left a tendency to try and steer things in a certain way, that like if I have somebody on, I guess I've noticed like how much of a script I was playing in my own head of like how things should come across and like what's going on here and stuff. So the more I've been doing the podcast, the more I've just like been open to listening. And I guess the other fear I would have had before would have been, if you're not thinking in your head about what you're going to ask next, and there's going to be like big kind of pauses in the conversation that are awkward.
Yeah, I've been the same as well, because I'd be like rhyming off what I need to know next instead of letting it flow.
Yeah.
And I kind of let that go myself, and that's been a great learning for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that was a huge thing for me in my life before, where it was like, you know, speaking to somebody day to day, you don't even realize how much you're like just waiting for your turn to speak or add to the story, and like you're not listening to what they're saying in those moments when you're trying to think of the next thing to say.
Reloading. I learned that on a leadership course, you know, when you're we practice communication, you know, so you're asked to talk to each other and then remember what he says. But a lot of the times you're just reloading, you're waiting for your turn, and you've missed the
yeah. And so a lot of things that can be insecurity driven. For me, a lot of it is insecurity driven of like, after the lulling conversation, it means that I'm a bad conversationalist. So
yeah.
It wasn't even about the other person or getting one over a lot of time, it was just about like
fill the space.
Yeah, I want to become across as like a social person and stuff, so I don't want it to be like awkward silences between
yeah,
us.
That's
and
gas. And same with me with doing the interviews, had to remember the questions, no, because I don't want them to come across like, oh, you don't know what I'm doing,
yeah.
He hasn't got a clue, why are you even doing podcasts, why are you even doing journalism or reporting? So I used to forbatim remember them off, so then now I'm just like, actually, look, if we meander left or we meander right, it's grand, I don't really give a rat's.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest learnings as well is that sometimes like you don't know what's going to work, or a lot of times you don't know what's going to work or what's going to resonate with people, and then the thing that you think wouldn't resonate with people resonates with people. So it's, after a while you're just like, fuck it, I'll just be myself and just do different things and see what do people like and stuff by me doing my thing. That's
yeah, I think what I'm getting from you here is that for you just intrinsically being happy about what you do,
yeah.
What you're doing, that's just working. Like, you're not even worrying about what the audience wants to hear, you're just delivering it from your perspective on what makes you happy, and then a byproduct is now that they will enjoy it.
Yeah, I guess that comes back to the question originally, it's like, what makes me happy? when you start operating from that premise, it's a win-win for you, because it's like you'll figure out eventually what resonates with people you are supposed to resonate with, and in doing so you'll also be living life of like, this is actually meaningful and this is a happy life for me. So you don't have to go through the process of like being successful and having an empty feeling, because you started from the premise that I want to be happy first, I want to have a life of meaning, and then from that you're building your life.
That's a cracking point. Really?
Yeah.
Simplistic, isn't it?
It's simple, yeah.
Wish someone hadn't told me that years ago. Fuck. I would have got all that money back for the council.
It's simple in theory, but like it's harder to implement, but at least when you're aware of that, that will save you a lot of wasted time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good place to start.
Absolutely. Just touching on the book that we've seen outside by Tim Ferriss, Mentors. Do you have any mentors that you look up to, guides, people that you keep an eye on to shape your stuff or shape your path?
Yeah, like over the years I've had a lot of different mentors. Like with mentors, I find that they help you, but it's also helpful to keep in mind that like to build your own kind of inner knowing as well, like to rely on yourself. So like I mentioned at the start, I've had mentors with state of mind, programming, but then I'd move forward and like I just kind of like, I don't know, sometimes I'm a big believer in when a student is ready, the teacher appears. So like I just kind of go with that sometimes as well. Sometimes you feel like I kind of got what I needed here and you just move on. It's like it doesn't really work, kind of prolonging it sometimes. I kind of drift with it. But I'm always learning from someone, if it's a podcast or an in-person person, I kind of like kind of go with it.
Yeah, what kind of podcast do you listen to, or who's your...
I like Lewis Howes. I like Russell Brand's podcast as well.
Okay.
Joe Rogan. Yeah, they're kind of the main ones that come to mind for me.
Were you a Blind Boy fan at all?
I listened to a few of his stuff, yeah. Yeah, I find him interesting. I haven't listened to an awful lot of it, but...
Yeah, I used to listen to him for a good while, and then he would start banging on about nutrition and giving nutritional advice, and it was just like somebody rubbing their nails down the blackboard.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I can't really listen to this, but obviously that's a bit of judgment, but I still stopped listening to it.
And there's a lot of good podcasts out there. Like,
oh yeah, like I got tons of education, like even when I've been in dark times, you know, or difficult periods, I put on the likes of Super Soul Sunday or Jack Kornfield, you know, the Buddhist practitioner, you know, they've been lifesavers. You know, you're spending 30 minutes in a car, it's nearly like carpool therapy.
Yeah.
So you stick on a bit of Oprah and listen to, I don't know, Brene Brown or...
Yeah, Brene Brown's good too.
Yeah, have you read any of her books?
I've read... Which one did I read again?
The Power of Vulnerability.
It's The Power of... What's the title? Is it The Power of Vulnerability?
The one, yeah. Yeah,
I've listened. I don't think I've read it. I've listened to an audible.
And yeah, me too.
Yeah,
definitely. Are you an Eckhart Tolle fan as well?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, like I like different things. Like in moderation, I actually find him quite funny as well. He's kind of there's something.
Yeah,
kind
he's quirky.
Of, yeah, and he's got a lot of wisdom. Like
some story.
Like again, that, I guess that for me, kind of for him, like if you listen with an open mind and not try and analyze what he's saying, you kind of get stuff from it. But when you try and analyze what he's saying, you go nowhere. So it's
I do that all the time, and that's only been a revelation. I only made a video tonight about this. As soon as I start watching or listening to any of these like spiritual leaders or people of any kind of stuff that's meant to be felt in the heart, I intellectualize it.
Yeah.
I think. When I get a problem, I think. I don't sit here with it.
Yeah.
I just go straight up, and then I try to fix a problem with the thing that created the problem. It's like going to a drug dealer and asking to help you get off drugs.
Exactly,
trying to get your mind to sort it out, you know, so it's a bit mad. But yeah, I love those spiritual kind of guys.
Yeah, Alan Watts as well as another guy.
Oh, I love Alan Watts, yeah.
Yeah. But I actually like YouTube, because YouTube you can kind of get short clips, or you can get clips like in, I kind of browse through YouTube every now and again and come across different things. And
if fall into a rabbit hole of YouTube.
Yeah, I guess you can do that. Yeah, I guess another thing to keep in mind, I guess, is the biggest transformation I've seen in my life is from creating. So like these things are very beneficial, like all the information, but until you start applying it, like when you start applying it, you have to get over your own emotions, and you have to like, that's when you start seeing things for real. It's like, I was afraid of this before, now I'm not. What has changed? Like until you get those real world situations, you're not going to really see a huge difference in your life. So I try and be conscious of that. Like I try and create as much as like I'm consuming, and the podcast helps me to do that, when I do that quite frequently.
That's interesting that you say that, Dennis. all you have now probably pulled back from my own. And I keep checking myself, oh, I need to go back reading, I need to go back learning. But I'm doing actually more now than I am listening and watching. Before, I used to be consumed with YouTube, Audible, books. I'd have a book and an Audible going at the same time, and I'd be watching things. Now I'm kind of pulled back. Are you finding that you're creating your own content and your own work more so?
Yeah, like, I think even right now, like, I'm not reading as much as I would have had before I wrote the book. I think you go through different phases.
Mm.
Like, I'm still reading a bit, but not to the extent that I was maybe a few years ago. And I think some people get stuck in that rabbit hole. I think, like, my kind of belief, what I've seen play out in my own life, is that, like, we're here to create things, and that's where we see change in our life. But when you get stuck in this kind of purgatory of, like, just consuming, like, material, it could be great material, like, it helps your life, but it only gets you so far because it's not your information, it's not stuff that you've learned. So it's an embodied level. You want to get more to the embodied level of, like, experiencing things, because it's more of a knowing then about things rather than something that's a theory in your head.
Yeah, absolutely. And then again, it's all these watching motivational videos, inspirational, spiritual leaders. It's nearly like planning to live your life, where you need to read it and then go out and either apply it or start doing your own stuff. That's what I found. I was like reading too much, watching too much, and I said, you know, I need to start practicing again. I suppose it was me just being intellectual again. Just, it was probably just easier for me to do it up here.
Yeah.
Now, like, I have to live it, you know, like, and there's a great quote, we'll touch on that later, you know, you have to be what you want the world to be, you know, you have to live it. Would you agree?
Yeah, like, it starts from the inside out. It's like, you do have to be the change you want to see, because you can't change other people. And, like for my life, what I've really been able to change is, like, how I see things and how I understand myself and, like, how I can see stories that are playing out in my life in a better, like, more clearly. From a lot of that's from taking action and doing things, getting outside my comfort zone and stuff.
100%. I now see the world totally different through different eyes. You know, I'm totally different now. My perspective on life is totally different, and I think that's just, as you said there, changing from the inside out, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
What would you do differently if you were to do your podcast and your journey again? Is there anything that you would change?
I don't know. Like, there's been, I think sometimes, like, the depth of what you do comes from the pain. Like, certain lessons, unfortunately, in my life, I've had to learn the hard way. And from doing that, it kind of, I guess it gives you a certain level of grit and a certain level of resilience that you have to do things in the world. Because, like, reality can be quite harsh at times. And it's, like, looking back in it, I could make my journey easier, but I don't think I'd actually have learned the lessons properly. I think I'd know what the lessons were, but I wouldn't have them on, like, more of an experiential level of, like when you burn your hand in a fire, it's a lot different than reading about it in a book. That's what I kind of put it down to. So
yeah.
I don't think I'd change anything, because I'd definitely be lacking a depth to what I'm doing if I didn't go through the tougher times and the tougher lessons I had to learn.
Fantastic. Right, so let's talk about the book. I have some notes here. The quotes, I filmed the quotes at the start, was my hook, because the first one then is the, you know, the only difference between genius and insanity is that genius has its limits. I put the book back down, I was just sitting there going, holy shit, that's wild.
Like, that's a good quote, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Why did you decide to go with that quote for us? Is that something that was relevant to you, or?
Kind of described the experience I went through at the start of the chapter. It's like I had that feeling like where I was living in an insane world, and there was no limits to it. It was just, there was no actual order to it. And so that kind of summed up the experience. It felt like there was no end to it. And like, was I actually going to come back from this? So that's kind of like what the quote, when I saw it, I think that summed up the first chapter.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. How would you describe the book?
I describe it as a self-help book. It's like, it's from lived experience. It's like for somebody, ideally somebody's going through something very traumatic like I went through, and realize that you can get out of it in a holistic way, and you can actually become better from it. You can actually grow from the experience. It's like post-traumatic kind of growth. So I really want to, like, help people to perceive things in a different way. So the book talks about mental illness, the experience of mental illness. So I want to help people to perceive that as something that they can grow from, rather than something that defines their life and places a limitation on their potential. So that's, I just want to get people thinking.
It's interesting that you say a self-help book. Yeah, it is a self-help book, but it doesn't come across like that cringy self-help book, like this is going to fix everything, this is just through my experience and anecdotal evidence.
Yeah.
There was loads of, it was so simplistic, you know, but yeah, it is a self-help book.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear that was my intention, to make it as simple as possible. I didn't want to like hide behind abstract words and stuff. I wanted to make it relatable so people could feel what I went through and realize that like you can actually come out of this in a very simple way.
Mm.
Like it does take a focus on the long term. It takes a focus of looking at aspects of yourself that you'd rather not look at. But by doing that, you can actually have a better life from doing that. So
mm-hmm.
I wanted it to be like grounded in reality and to also have like an optimistic outlook in life regardless of what happens to you. Because for me, it's like the reality is that you either stay stuck and move backwards or you can move forward.
Mm.
And moving forward sometimes requires kind of swallowing your ego, swallowing your pride, and learning the lessons from it.
So you weren't trying to be the next Limerick's answer or the Kerry's answer to Tony Robinson now with your self-help?
No, I guess I use the word self-help because it's just like a word that people might be familiar with now.
Mm.
But it's
a
like,
buzzword, isn't it?
It's like I didn't know what else to describe it as. Like it's it really goes into my own psychology, and it goes into like how do you actually go about practically healing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But like how do you sum that up in like, I couldn't say that to you as like what's the genre of the book. So self-help seemed to be the natural fit.
It can be self-help, it's inspirational, it's motivational, it's purely fucking educational.
Mm.
You know, it's seeped in education, psychology. You know, there's Jung in there, there's Einstein, it's an educational book. It does help, but it's inspirational as well, you know.
Well, that's what's changed. Like, I've always been driven by making an impact on how people perceive education. Because from my experience at school, it felt like it was just a weird kind of, you go there and you're encouraged to do well, but at the same time, you're like encouraged not to do too well. And it's like, you're trying to fit in with your peers, and then you're given these categories of like what you can do and you can't do. So like for me, it was like a weird experience. But when I came out the other side, you know, my life was really in a dark place. I realized that education got me out of it, self-education.
Yeah.
It was like, that's when it started shifting. It was like, learning can actually improve my life. It can improve the quality of my life. I never got that before until I went through a situation where I was like, how do I get out of this? And that was the only thing that actually worked.
Yeah.
It was like taking education back into my own hands. And then like getting back to curiosity, imagination, all that stuff that I was insecure about, that I let go just to fit in, I went back to all that. So I guess I felt like I betrayed kind of my creative side and my imagination and like my capacity to do things because of my insecurities, like what would people think. So I got the situation where I was like, well, worrying what people think got me here, so why not do things that make me happy and that I can create from and imagine again, like what's the worst that can happen? It can't be any worse than this. That was my kind of premise, and that's what I want to get across to people, that like it's your perception of learning that's the key thing. It's not how the system is.
Mm, yeah, because I've got major hang-ups about the system. Well, my own personal failings, that's why, right? Then when I went back to education in later life, because I had the thoughts and the perception that education is this, this, and this, and I'm not ready for it because the system told me I wasn't, because I failed and I didn't fit into the box that they tried to put me in. And when I went back, just like what you're saying, I went, fucking hell, it's actually different. It's not the way I had perceived it. And then I was like, full steam ahead.
Yeah,
it's mad. You talk about in the book, there's a quote where you talk about the meaning matters when it comes to hacking. Could you just explain that piece to me
for the language hacking?
Yeah
that was a key thing for me. It was a weird one because I discovered language hacking at the same time that I had the psychosis, and the key thing for me with language hacking was that I was looking more towards the meaning rather than the specific word. So I realized with French that whenever you focus on a specific word in the foreign language, it often throws you when you miss one word. Even though if you focus on the meaning, you could understand what they're trying to say to you, what they're trying to convey.
Right.
So when it came to learning the Spanish and Italian, I was like, what if I learn the keywords and forget about learning every single word in the sentence and look for the meaning that can be sometimes derived from the keywords in the sentence?
Fuck.
You know, so like, I am happy. Like, if you didn't understand I am, if you just understood happy, you have a good chance that they said that this guy's happy.
That's deadly.
Kind of thing, you know? But then with the psychosis, what happened was that, which was frightening, was that I was starting to hear storylines behind what people were saying in the movies. That's when it started to get crazy. It was like there were stories playing out where they were telling me about certain things, and that so they were speaking to me directly, and so they would speak to me in metaphors and stuff. So you would always be able to tie back to my life. So I guess with the book, I want to help people to understand the mind of somebody going through that, of like, why are they misinterpreting what I said? Because like from my experience, it was I was understanding things in metaphors. It was like paranoia and stuff. So like somebody looking at that, like a rational person who's never been through that, you couldn't comprehend why is this person interpreting things in this way. So I wanted to, I guess, give a voice to that, so people can understand that like this person might be interpreting it this way because of he's looking at the meaning and the metaphors and stuff, and it's always coming back to him. So yeah, so like there was a positive there, so that helped me to learn things in general, because I was looking more at like principles and patterns rather than the specific stuff. So in today's world, you often see people get lost with new technologies and new different things because they're looking at the surface level details. They're not looking at like what's the principle here, what's the patterns that this is built off of.
Wow.
So that's the positive side. But then it went a bit crazy, but like I learned from that, and I guess from that insight, then I want to share that, like help people to understand the mind of somebody who's kind of going through something crazy and have some compassion, because what I needed at that time was just like somebody to listen and just let me vent out the madness, but be aware that like they're not reacting, it's a safe space.
Yeah, that's mad. I was only talking to my little brother about today, we were talking about stuff about mental health and other things, and he was like, I think people just want to be heard. And I said, people just want you to listen to them. They don't want your voice, just want you to give them an open space, non-judgment, bit of love and kindness and understanding.
Yeah.
That's what we need. It's very simplistic, but people try to fix you. Did you find that?
Yeah, that, like if I was to describe a sensation, it would have been the feeling of not being heard. And then what makes it frustrating is that you're in a situation where you've got all this paranoia, all these stories and stuff, and then you getting frustrated makes the matter even worse. But like all you really want is somebody to like listen, not judge. And then hopefully you might start seeing the madness by talking it out.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I guess, yeah, I wanted to get that across, because when I was in that situation, if I didn't come out of it again, I would have never gotten that message across, that like it was the sense of not being heard and not being listened to. So that's...
How long did the episode of psychosis go on for? Was it 2 or 3 years? Or?
No, it just happened for a week. So I was living in France.
That's where they got the time lapse. You were living in France and you came back over. You were over there studying, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was learning... Well, I was teaching English over there and I was improving my French, and I came across language hacking, learning Spanish and Italian. Right. And see, there was a mixture of different things. I was becoming very isolated. At the time, I didn't understand the importance of drinking water every day as well, like for your brain. And I just didn't understand.
Who knew?
Yeah, I was probably told that, but I just didn't pay attention. Yeah. I don't know. But then I thought one of the key things was the emotional intelligence. It was like, I didn't know what was going on with me. Like I had all this kind of anger and frustration coming up. Because like when I came across language hacking, I was kind of very angry. Like, why weren't we taught to think properly in school? I was like, I've never came across these concepts. And like, I was like, why weren't we told this? So there was a lot of anger and a lot of resentment coming up. Some of it was towards myself too. Why didn't you just be yourself? Why didn't you do the things that like you were insecure about? But I wouldn't be able to verbalize that stuff. It was all like overwhelming sensations of like betraying myself and just being annoyed with like people and the system and that kind of stuff. And that was left fester because I didn't know what these emotions, where they were coming from. I thought
you know language for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
What's this thing fucking going on here? You just want to smash it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was just extreme frustration. And that continued because you don't have the understanding of like, this is coming from my own stories, my own head, and these emotions are just a continuous negative cycle. And so something has to give in the end. And so like for me, it was the emotional intelligence has been the key thing for me to change in my life after that. And with the emotional intelligence, then you can use your analytical mind more as a tool rather than something that was being controlling you, like the master.
Oh yeah, Jack Kornfield talks about that, you know. But the mind being not being the master, you know, let it be, you know, we become the servant to it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, I guess I've had the biggest experience of that was like when I wasn't aware of the emotions that these stories are coming from and stuff. So that made me better able to like learn stuff and just like, I guess it takes this thing out of failing as well.
Mm.
So like when you're completely identified with your analytical mind and your ability to do things intellectually, like that becomes your self-identity and your self-image, and like that can be very destructive. Like I still struggle with that, like, but it's, I'm at least I'm aware of it.
Yeah, awareness is the key.
Yeah,
you know, and anything you want to do, you know, with the education, mental health, social and emotional intelligence,
yeah,
having a lack of awareness, how do you know you had a problem if you don't know you have a problem?
Exactly, it's a contrast. Yeah,
yeah, like you see people getting up on stage in X Factor and start singing, and your man goes, "You're shy." No one has ever told me. They lack awareness. Like, that's the lack of awareness right there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's a deadly quote in the book where you talk about the problems with your brain that plays out completely in your own mind. I was like, fuck, that's mad. You know, again, it's back to the whole silent disability. It's in your head. People can't see it.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was really frustrating because, like, when I was going through this, like, I was aware of it too. Like, people are either going to think you're really being dramatic or you're on drugs. They're the two extremes that people go to. When there's no education about the brain or, like, how things can go badly wrong. I just think in general in society there's a lack of understanding of, like, what's playing out in our heads, what effects the stories we're having in our life,
mm-hmm.
How much we're actually projecting onto other people. So, like, yeah, so, like, that was really, really frustrating because I was aware that this is happening in my head, and I was also aware that other people can't see what's happening inside my head. So it was like, and I did have to go on medication too, because it got into the stage where it was out of hand. Like, I had to get something to bring my brain back into order again. Thankfully that happened. But the healing part wouldn't have happened if I didn't, like, look at the emotional work. So, like, for me, the medical or the medication was like a band-aid.
Yeah,
it fixed the problem for a bit.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's a symptomatic approach, isn't it? It looks after the runny nose and the cold, but you do have to get to the root cause.
Yeah, exactly.
And you talk about that brilliant in the book.
Yeah, that's my intention. It's like, I guess another thing that was limiting me was this idea that if I went on medication, then it happened. But if I didn't go on medication, I could just sweep it under the carpet and it didn't work. So I was using my willpower to, like, try and fix myself. That doesn't work, like, when you're talking about, like, on a physiological level something's gone wrong. So I eventually realized that, like, this isn't helping, and I have to, like, it was an ego thing. It was like I had to swallow my pride and go, no, this isn't working, I have to ask for help. And I got the help, but then, yeah, it was like, if I didn't look at the emotional work and go on my own kind of journey over the last 8 years, then I don't know kind of how things would be. I don't think they would be that positive, to be honest, because I wouldn't have gotten to the root cause of, like, what was happening. So that's what I want to help people with. It's like medication, like, it's finding that balance. Medication could be needed initially, but you might also have the option of, like, seeing this as an opportunity to, like, take an honest look at your life to make it better. Like,
you've got balls of steel. People, not everyone does that. People like the, you know, the pharmacological approach, and that's as deep as I'm going to go.
Yeah. But that's fair enough too,
and that's okay. There's no judgment.
I guess I'm just trying to give a pat to the person who was like me 8 years ago, and I was like, no, this isn't for me, but I don't know what to do. So I just had a sense that there was another pat. I didn't have any examples of it at the time, so I guess I'm giving an example for somebody who could be in a similar pat. They know they don't want to do this, but they want to have, like, a clear kind of some sort of blueprint to go, okay, I can try something along this line instead.
So, and again, it's about having options as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, because the chances are, like, the medication might not always work, and this little thing will come popping back up again, you know?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Sometimes medication doesn't work, so
no.
Sometimes you might have another choice but to look for another option.
Yeah, and I don't, and people don't say to me about medication. I say, look, do whatever works for you. I'm not going to start knocking meds or whatever that, because I can't say if they work for you or anyone else.
Yeah.
I have my own path, and it's the road I went down. But if it's something you want to do, try lots of options, because generally, as we know, you have to get a lot of ducks in a row. Social and emotional intelligence, your drinking water, your sleep, and your eating, your environment, the people you spend your time with, you know, that whether they are positive or negative to you. So you could be taking the medication, but all the other contributing factors could be off kilt.
Yeah,
and you'd be up shit creek without a paddle, but you go, oh, I'm sure I'm taking the meds.
Yeah,
there's so much to get involved. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, that's a good.
I think you made a great point in the book as well. A tough part for you was the language being used around it.
Yeah, that was really difficult. It's only been, I'd say, this year that I've come to terms with accepting those words and stuff. On one level, the language helps because it actually shines a light on this is real. So that, like I said at the start, the most frustrating part is people don't understand what's going on. So the initial assumption is drugs or you're being dramatic. But But then once you get a label, you've got somebody medically saying, oh no, something's gone wrong in the brain here, and he is actually seeing this stuff. So that helps, but then what doesn't help is identifying with that label and that becoming a reality. So I was aware that that could happen, but I didn't know how the hell do you not allow that to happen. So I just went on my own kind of journey. I had to figure out what was this first and then be comfortable with it and understand it so that other people's projections don't affect me then. But until you're in that place, it's hard because you could let other people, how they perceive you, influence like how you see yourself. But once you get to a solid place of like, I understand this, it doesn't define who I am,
yeah.
Then you're good. That's what I want to get across. And I want to get across that that's possible so you can come back to like seeing yourself as a normal human being. You went through stuff, it's like breaking your leg or whatever. It's like things happen in life, it doesn't need to define you.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give somebody, how do you actually do that? Because that was my question. How do you actually not let this define you?
Yeah, that's interesting because I was the same when I first didn't want mental health. Probably never knew what anxiety was. I never actually knew the word anxiety. I just said, oh, my worry, I'm like me, man, I'm like me, that. And then I didn't want to be labeled with all the crazy stuff. You know, people used to call me weird. I freaked out. I didn't like the word weird.
Yeah.
But now I've gone full circle where I absolutely don't give a flying fuck what people say or do around me because I've become so self-assured. But I wouldn't say to people that's what to do. You have to go through the journey. You have to go through the path like what you're on.
Yeah, it's finding what works for you, what sits well with you. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get across.
Yeah, there was another great point in the book where he says acceptance of your problem. That opened the door for you and it was quite healing and powerful.
Yeah, like, I think if you don't acknowledge the problem exists, it just kind of hangs there. At least if you can, I guess that's the first step to solving a problem is acknowledging the problem exists. You might know where to begin or where to start, but like you're done pretending that there's no problem there. So that's
no more carpet to sweep under. Like, yeah, get exactly. The fuck out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because like the thing is, when you do that, it just magnifies the problem. It doesn't go away until you solve them. Like so. Yeah, like that's kind of where I'd encourage people to begin. It's a simple step, but it's the hardest step as well.
Yeah, accepting your failures, accepting your success, accepting where you're at. I think it's a huge one. It's gigantic. I struggle with it all the time. Accepting what is. But I think, excuse me. I think it's powerful if you can manage. I wouldn't tell people to start going accepting. I had this conversation at work with somebody. I was saying to a lady about acceptance, and she said, well, I couldn't ask people up in the ward and the spinal to accept their injury. And I said, I'm not saying to accept what's happened in the past, accept where you're at.
Yep.
It's a hard one, and it's contextualized, it's to the person as well, you know. But it is, it's empowering if you can accept where you're at.
Yep.
I thought another great approach was the problem solving to mental health, you know, using it as an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a lot of people do that. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I saw it as a challenge. But I didn't see it as like a problem that just defines me. I guess it might have helped that I never saw myself as like mentally unstable or anything like that. I never had that self-image. So for me, like when I was confronted with the reality of this, it didn't compute. I was like, this isn't me. And like, why should this become me now? So I guess I looked at it then as like a challenge, like a problem to solve. So I was like, okay, if I can overcome this, then I can also help people, other people overcome it as well, because it's been a lived experience. So I looked at it that way. And when I looked at it that way, like my focus and attention was completely different to somebody who looked at it in a way of like, I'm fucked and like, I don't know what to do. And I'm just gonna go with what people tell me. Mm-hmm. I guess like I was touching on, I was so fed up with myself letting other people define who I was and taking other people's advice at face value. So I was, oh, screw this, and I'm like, gotta start figuring things out myself. And I guess that's how I became a better critical thinker and using my logic better and stuff and thinking through things. And I guess that's like computer programmer today because I've developed those sort of skills in myself.
It's probably one of the quotes that I resonate with the most, because when I went through a difficult period back and when I started off my journey in 2008-09, my approach was to fix this problem. I went to intellect on it. I probably read maybe two or three books in a day or 2 days. I'd be better than it. Throw that away, fix the problem, watch Edgar Tolle. I'd be watching spiritual people. Like all the while, you know, was a problem solving approach. helped a lot of the way, but didn't have to do other stuff as well. I just totally immersed myself in it, you know, and you know, analyze, at least the paralyze the stage. I was like, I had too much information, like too much knowledge. I was like, what the fuck do I do with all this? this fella says this, and this fella says do that.
But that's the thing. Yeah, you reach a stage where you're like, because everybody's in their own path, learning their own different lessons. It's like somebody could say the exact opposite to another person, both of it works. And you're like, what works then? And then you're like, that's helpful at the beginning. It gives you some patterns, principles, general principles that people go on. But then you have to like bring it back to like, what's it specifically in my life? Like, and then that's where you need to start going, like, trusting yourself, trusting your own things, and then being okay with learning from the mistakes you're going to make for like, but while you're doing that process.
Yeah, and that kind of segues on to my next kind of question, because you talk about in the book, then you talk about when you slow down, through your intentions, through your meditation, you can start seeing the answers to your questions.
Yeah, so I was never aware of that in school, like that you can ask an introspective question. I remember when I was in France at that time too, I was asking a lot of like big questions of myself, big all-encompassing questions of what's the meaning of life and that type of stuff. And because I didn't really have an experience of like introspectively asking, I was tending to analyze it quite a bit. And like, you don't get answers for big questions from your analytical mind. You get it more from like introspection, reflection, and that type of stuff. So I forget the question. It was about to be at the start.
Oh, I do that all the fucking time. I'm like, what did you ask me? I do that. My daughter goes, Dad, where are you going? I'm like, fuck, Dad, go on, ask me the question again. So what I basically said was like, when you slow down and you looked at your intentions through meditation, you were able to see the answers to your questions.
Yeah. Like, yeah, the important stuff. It's like, I guess it's like, it's one of those things where to up-level your perspective on things, it won't come from thinking about it. Because that's what's got you where you are right now.
Back to the help again, the drug dealer to help you get off the drugs.
Exactly, yeah. It's
the problem that got you into this was the thinking and the overthinking.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get back out of it by overthinking.
And that's how a mentor can help. So it really depends where you're at in life and stuff. Like, because they can provide a different perspective. Because sometimes you can't conjure up your own perspective. It'll be from talking to somebody else. So podcast is great for me that way. Like a different perspective.
Oh, 100%. Different things. Like, Yeah, it's all about like just seeing it from a different perspective, and that's not wrong or right. And just something that you said earlier, which kind of resonated with me, was developing a critical thinking.
Yeah.
Even developing a critical thinking to your own thinking.
Yeah.
I start asking myself difficult questions, and when I say that in my vlogs, it's like when I want to inspire people. I mean, ask yourself difficult questions, different questions, not the general ones. Is question your thoughts, like, you know, and look at them. Is it? Yeah, it's hard, but again, I wouldn't be saying to people, start doing that now. There's a journey to it. You know?
Yeah, it depends where you're at. Like,
absolutely. This leads me on to a brilliant quote. It's, believe it, see it, become it. I read that in the book. I thought it was fantastic. You know, talk us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, like, I think in my kind of experience, it's been, you kind of just believe with not, there's a certain amount of faith at the start. Like, you've got no proof that, like, you're going to make progress in your life.
Yeah.
There's this belief that, like, if I become more true to myself, if I start listening to myself more, I can start carving out something. But I guess what helps then is, like, you start seeing people who are where you want to be, similar kind of stuff. You start reading books as well. So you start seeing proof. That's where the proof thing comes in, even though you don't realize it at the time. You're like, okay, this does exist, and I can start becoming, moving in this direction. Yeah, gradually you become that because you're starting to immerse yourself. So with languages, I learned like artificial immersion, or even going to the country and really immersing yourself. That's the best way to learn a language. So it's the same principle. It's like you immerse yourself in something. It's a relaxed kind of immersion. Like, that would be probably the one thing I would recommend to my former self, is that, like, you can immerse yourself relaxing into it rather than forcing it. It's like you're gradually, it's a good book actually, Willpower Doesn't Work. Kind of one of the premises is you start molding your environment rather than trying to will yourself to do something.
Yeah, that's it. And that's something that I would always do, you know. I'd get the book, I'd get the course, I'd go balls to the wall on it, you know. I'd intellect the fuck out of it. Where now, like, even my spiritual journey, even my education or something, I'm trying to feel it more now, rather than being a highbrow intellect, oh, la 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 la.
Yeah.
It's actually immerse yourself in the rather than the.
The thing is, from doing, like, you start dropping the stories, like, what's made me most unhappy, and what continues to make me most unhappy, is the stories I have about stuff. Sorry about what this means and what that means. And what really helped me was, like, realizing that the meaning comes from my own interpretation of the event rather than the event itself. Like, so that's a key thing to keep in mind. I mentioned in the book about stoicism.
Mm-hmm.
So because of what I went through, it was such a... It really kind of, I was open to everything. I was like, because I didn't really know what was going on anymore, because I was like disillusioned by everything, everyone, my whole life. Just like, I was like, what the hell is this? What is this? And so when I read Stoicism, then I was like, because I had that experience, I was open to seeing things differently. And like, that's when I started seeing, like, it's the meaning I'm attaching to things. And that can serve you well, because then you're no longer bound to a situation. Again, it comes back to like swallowing your pride and your ego and going, the issue isn't the situation, the issue is me. And it's like, move forward. And it's like...
Brilliant. Just as I was sitting here, I was like, thinking about these quotes, and a little insecurity started popping up. Oh man, I'm going to have to read these quotes. I hope I don't make a balls. It's amazing where your mind goes.
I like quotes, though. They really helped me over the years. They kind of act as like... They kind of keep you on track. They kind of stick in the mind, and it's like, you kind of know you're on the right path by sticking to what they're saying as much as you can.
This one's a fantastic one here by Carl Jung. What you resist not only persists but will grow in size.
Yeah, that quote alone has helped me an awful lot. It's the principle of what you focus on. And I talked about it in the book there, like, I learned the hard way. I learned by focusing on things I didn't want earlier on.
Yeah.
That I was getting more of it. And so when I was in that situation, like, okay, if it works that way, then it must work the other way too. I was hoping it works the other way. That's when I started testing it out. It's like, so that's when I started focusing on books, podcasts, and that's how I've written a book today and stuff. Like, I didn't shift that focus and attention towards the stuff I wanted in my life.
Mm.
And I have a long term. I didn't think this was going to happen overnight or it was going to happen in a few months. I kind of expect it's going to take years for this to work out. But that's what you want too, because you're like,
I don't do that.
You're building a life.
I do everything yesterday, because I told somebody I'm thinking around the book, and she goes, when are you writing in 2 weeks? And I went, 3 maybe, and she goes, yeah, just calm down there. So yeah.
I get like that too.
Yeah.
Different things. But it's I guess it's just generally have a general direction to move towards in your life. I think that's been the key thing for me.
Mm. That is another fantastic quote by Albert Einstein. Knowledge will take you from A to B, but imagination will take you everywhere.
Yeah, I guess that comes back to the getting out of your analytical mind.
Oh, deadly.
Meditation and stuff.
Creativity, you know, it's limitless. Like, as we say, it's just limitless. It's childish. It's just, you can go anywhere with it rather than, as you say, the analytical mind.
Yeah, but I think what tends to happen is that when we go through a system which doesn't really encourage imagination, that a lot of us either lose imagination, we don't believe we're imaginative or we're creative. And what played out in my life was that, like, I believed, yeah, I'm grown up now and I'm not like that and into imagination or creating stuff. It was just paranoia then that was playing out in my life. Like, it wasn't extreme paranoia, but it was like just little dramas in my life and people I didn't really want in my life. And just, like, I just adapted to my environment because I thought that's what you should do, rather than questioning whether these people are the right people for me, whether I'm the right person for them. So, like, that was my imagination at play a lot of the time, because it was not occupied in a constructive manner. So once I started doing the podcast, writing my blogs and that kind of stuff, now I had an outlet for my analytical mind to be focused on something constructive that could, number one, benefit me, and then benefit people over time then if it became valuable. So it's I guess that's one thing I keep in mind, is like, a creative person wants to do things, is that do things for yourself first and foremost. Like, for me, that sounded really selfish at the start, but it's not, because you're not guaranteed like what will land with people. And the only other thing is to like adapt yourself to people again, and then you might succeed, but then you realize, I've adapted myself to somebody I'm not, and you're unhappy again, so you're back to square one.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it's finding outlets for your imagination, and then just see what happens. It's like, your life will change over time. It's like, as your imagination shifts from paranoia to a constructive force.
Absolutely. Well, I've always believed that through my intrinsic love of things, people will benefit from them if they're interested in my journey, the things that I like, whether it be mental health, nutrition, lifestyle, meditation. And if you don't, I'm like, ah, sure, look, jog on then. So, you know, but I do start from the inside. I do what's going to please me.
Did that take a while to get to as well?
No.
No, for me it's taking a while.
Me from the get-go.
Yeah.
These are what I like, and I'm going to do it. And if you like it, you like it. If you don't, then that's pant.
Yeah.
But it came from a selfish point in service of...
Yeah.
I says, this is going to... Like, I have resources in the hospital, whether it be psychiatrist, psychologist, nutritionist, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to bring this education. And I really believe that it was beneficial for me. And then people will learn from it.
Yeah.
So it was, and I hope that doesn't sound arrogant. But
no,
it's just like,
a good place to come from.
I was just like, I'm going to learn all this and then I'll show you. Because I love sharing, learning. When I read a book, I'm like, hey, will I give this to you? Someone needs to read this.
Yeah.
Because I'll give it to you. And he goes, would you read that? And I mean, you could talk about it. And that's kind of what I want to do with the podcast.
Yeah. I was very, very much like that a few years ago, I think. I've kind of cut it back a bit as I realized that, like, I've been like, number one, a lot of people I'd suggest books they wouldn't read the book. I just kind of went, I mean, like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But people pay more attention to your actions than your words, so it's like, okay, I'll just let things speak for themselves.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. There's another, we've two great quotes left. As the physically weak man can make himself strong by carefully and patient training, so the man of weak thoughts can make them strong in right thinking. James Allen, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I like that quote, yeah. Like, again, that's another ego hit. It's like acknowledging that, like, no, I could be doing better in the way I'm thinking. Like, right thinking there can kind of troll you because, like, I kind of grew up subliminally kind of taking on this weird kind of notion of moralistic and all this kind of stuff.
What is right thinking?
Up to the person. For me, it's been like thinking that's in service of myself and of other people. It's like thinking that's not like neurotic and just not serving any purpose at all. It's like thinking that can actually be a creative force and make a positive impact, and like thinking that can help people to think. And it's like I guess another way of it is like not being just a robot with a conditioned thinking, because we all have, like, from growing up in society and stuff, there's a lot of conditioned thinking we've grown into that we need to start breaking free of. And I guess right thinking is that process of like questioning, why do I think like that? And then realizing, oh, maybe it's like, I don't even know why I'm thinking like that. I guess that's a good way to think of right thinking. It's like, do you know why you're thinking like that?
Yeah.
And you start, because then that means you can start breaking away from just conditioned, mindless thinking and going more towards like, what do I actually think about this? What do I feel about this? And then as well, like, after a while, as you get better at that, you'll let go of certain thinking. It's like, this served me to a purpose, and then it's now, it's not serving me here, so what's the better way of thinking about it? What's the better way of looking at this, so I can move forward in this direction? So yeah, it's like, I guess the right thinking is having that distance from the thinking itself, and then you can use it in a better way. That's a
great point. I always used to feel guilty about the thoughts that I had. I shouldn't think this, oh, I shouldn't think that, because somebody told me that, oh, you don't think this and you shouldn't do it and you should be doing this and you shouldn't have these fears and shouldn't be anxious and I shouldn't be nervous, and in this situation I'm a man, I should be presenting a certain way, I shouldn't be getting nervous, and all these fucking mind terrorists like going bananas up there shooting at me.
But I guess it comes back to the Carl Jung quote there, whatever you resist persists and even magnifies. So that was my experience. It's like, I didn't want to think these thoughts, but then I'd pay more attention to them because it's not something I want to think.
100%. That's my greatest one. It's like, oh, I don't want this fear, I don't want this anxiety, and all of a sudden I'm focused on it.
Yeah.
And then you have to kind of go and shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Last quote, be the change you want to see in the world. Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, like that for me, it's like, I guess operating from that premise is what changed things for me. I think before that I thought that how to change the world was like, you need to like change your environment to make yourself more comfortable and like change other people or whatever. But then I realized that, like, no, it's like, it's about changing yourself. That's the only thing you can actually do.
I never even thought of that. Like, that is, it's an inside job, as they say, you know.
I didn't either, but what I went through, that's the conclusion I went to, because there's nothing else that I could, because I realized that, like, my irrational thinking and my need to control things, but that was one of the first things. It was like controlling, like getting myself better so this never happened. That was one of the first things.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, nobody was ever find out about this. It was another controlling thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was realizing that, like, all that was actually making everything worse, this need for control and this need to like control things. So I was like, if I want to have actual meaningful change in my life, it probably won't come from thinking that way of like the outside of like changing other people. So then it, like, the logical conclusion then is like, it must come from changing myself, my world will change. So it was like, I think I had some realization at one point where it was like just realizing that all the patterns are beginning with me, and then realizing that, okay, just that realization won't fix the patterns, but at least I'm done lying to myself that like these patterns aren't anything to do with me, because that's what I was doing before. Unconsciously, I assumed it was, because the patterns were so different, I always assumed they had to be coming from other people.
Mm.
So like just having that realization that like, no, they're actually coming from me, I don't always see it, but at least I have some power now because I can change, and that means the pattern can change.
Yeah, and you know, blame is easier than accept, isn't it? Like
I had a quote there. What was the physically weak man? It was that quote that helped me, because that was one of my long-term objectives, was to strengthen my mind rather than weaken it. So then I saw blame as like, what would a weak person do? They blame.
Oh yeah.
So it was just kind of, it's being clear on like, what's your objective here, that really kind of stands you in the long term.
It's back to what you were saying there, when you slow down and you meditate, but your intentions.
Yeah.
Intention is a huge one. Yeah. Like, I start off my day with, what is my intention? What's my mind at today? Where am I? I stop and I go, what's my intention? And sometimes it's not great. I go, right, my intention is just to get through today.
Mm.
And set, you know, and I think that's a great thing to do, is to pause and stop, like you said in that quote, is to slow down.
Yeah, I think intention is good. That's actually helped me as well with, like, the way some people misperceive you, and you can start second guessing yourself. But what's that always helped me is, like, what was my intention here? Was it to do harm? If it was, then it was my, then I should be fucking changing things. But if it wasn't, then I can't control people's perceptions. So I might keep that in mind, that like, for next time, maybe I might perceive in a certain way. But I'm not going to dwell on that too much, because that leads to a lot of overthinking, because you start like focusing on other people's perception rather than just like doing your thing. Because mm-hmm. some people will be offended by anything you do, so it's,
yeah, you know, 100%. And I don't, though, I start implement that when I'm sending people texts. I'd say, what's your intention? What are you trying to get from this?
Yeah.
Are you being a prick? Are you being nice? Are you being sound? And you just stop and pause rather than go, a random text or whatever, and you just start vent at somebody. And I went, what's my intention? You're being a bitch, or you're being an asshole, put the phone away.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's mad. You can do that all the time. I didn't realise that as well. You could actually stop and pause.
Yeah.
Because I grabbed my phone, not letting him say that to me.
Yeah.
And you go, what's your intention here? You know, like, you're being a prick, put the phone away.
Yeah.
And you can do that in any kind of life, any part of your life. Last question, I'll let you go. What's the one thing you'd like people to take away after listening to this interview?
It's the main thing for me is like, to rethink how we think about mental illness. That's not something that needs to define you. And to think about how we think about learning. It's like, for me, in my own life, it's been the relationship with learning, how that has changed, has actually changed my life. And it sounds very simple, it sounds like, oh, that's rubbish or whatever. But like, when you rethink how you think about learning and you start seeing it in a light that actually is helpful, then you can start like thinking differently. And you start realizing the impact your thinking has. When your thinking actually starts changing, then your life starts changing as well. Like, but until you start changing your thinking, you don't get experience of like how powerful your thoughts can be and how powerful your focus and attention can be. So yeah, the simple thing is like, nothing has the power to define you, and rethink how you think about learning if it's not having a positive impact in your life.
That's absolutely fantastic. I love the book. It's like two books in one. I love the quotes. They were just stand alone. You could actually just take the quotes and live by some of them. And then your experience too was brilliant. It was brave. It was purely honest. I loved it. And then the artwork was genius.
I like it, yeah.
Fucking, who done the artwork?
David Villalobos, he's based in El Paso in Texas. So I have Lisa Caprelli was like the publisher, and she just mentioned towards the end that her cousin is an illustrator. And it's funny because it tied into like, when I was younger, I wanted to be a cartoonist, and that was one of the first things I remember of like the world telling me you can't do what you want to do.
I remember me and you having this conversation about like your art and all, but it worked.
Yeah.
Class, like, you know, you've done a fantastic job. As I say, the story, the quotes, the art is absolutely fantastic. Like, fair play to you. I'm honoured that you sent me a copy before you published it. It was brilliant reading it, and you're an ambassador for mental health, and I'm honoured to have you on the podcast. Thanks very much for your time and the book. You're a good servant to the world, and you're the first person I've had in my studio.
Was it?
Yeah, you're the first one. This, I was a virgin to my studio now. Nice. I even got your name wrong earlier. We started off bad lovers. Look, thanks very much. I really appreciate your time. You're an absolute legend, pal.
Great. Thanks for having me on.